Blog Talk Radio.
Marvin didn't try to be magic or charismatic and all that. He just was. Even when he sung the national anthem, I mean, it was Marvin Gaye. You know, it was just unique. It was special.
Can you see Whoa!
The man you're about to see and hear, should you be so foolish as to have just joined us, is Ray Charles.
Hello. All right. 3, 4.
I got something, y'all, in my bones. Make me want to shout hallelujah. And I want to sing along. Lift every voice and sing, till it in heaven ring, ring with the harmony. Oh, let it be. Let our rejoices rise high. Burning the loud as Georgia.
Underground Radios Network. It's Open Mic Monday. We're going to give a little update on Superstorm Sandy. And we're also going to probably have a little update on the election news. And we're going to have my girl Tara Stamps come on and talk about the teachers that got arrested Friday evening at City Hall. They went under the radar, but we're going to bring her on to talk about it. Before I get to my commercial break, let's give a little shout-out to Barack Obama, who's in Chicago right about now, probably listening to my station. And all those people that went out there and voted early, and it's going to vote tomorrow. Play this little cut, then we'll come back with some commercial breaks, then probably come back with some news update. This is Hip Hop History Month, and I will be playing a little hip hop today. So this is for everybody that voted.
Bruh. A little something for the people. Bruh. Thank y'all for listening.
And talk about the victim last night that got popped. And who the best on the block with the crack rock? Play a lot of pocket banging till the track stop. It's in our nature to run into this jackpot. Hoping not to scrape the flow for that rah-rah. But you envision that trip, this isn't my
long eyes. The anticipation turns to aggravation. So when words of wisdom spoke, you hear blah blah. Cause if that wise guy turns to a wise guy, I pray to God that that guy ain't on a high rise. And if he is, I hope the earth he got nine lives. See, this is the type of life I seen with my eyes. Ghost boys whipping in the ghost fire on the 9 to 5, but no bow ties. Cause when Jay's on the street, you're solo, no lie. All black attire, shooting with a bow tie.
A time comes when silence is betrayal. Even when pressed by the demands of inner truth, men do not easily assume the task of opposing their government's policy, especially in time of war.
And watch a nigga kill another nigga. So one dead, one in jail, so soon there'll be no niggas. They scamming for the dough, nigga. I can't trust them, I don't know them. Them yo niggas, I need the source, they either leave or buy. Cause these niggas don't care if I breathe or die. So put your pride aside and let your wings fly. Don't be a middleman, be the man who supplies. The definition of a boss, let it multiply. And if they oppose that, they all can die. Cause if they move fast, that's when them cautions fly. So I'd rather be alive than a homicide. Feel my spirit, see my girl and my mama cry. And all my niggas pouring liquor for the honor. I vow to be the realest without ever saying it. So serious, I ain't kidding, nigga, who you playing with?
Where our rank on this earth to be a man, to be a human being, to be respected as a human being, to be given the rights of a human being in this society, on this earth, in this day, which we intend to bring into existence by any means necessary.
By any means necessary.
Fucking the same chick your man had last week. Now he's emotional, so now you got beef. Instead of him checking out who the hoe be, next thing you know, he let go free. To the chest, now we gotta lay another brother down to rest. That wall getting full, cause y'all full of the bull. No more level up, cause all they do now is cool. 15 years old, not even in school, but he know mathematics better than you. A community that knows everything about you, but when it goes down, they don't know what to do. What type of sense is that? No clue. So instead of waiting for them, you make the first move. Instead of talk about the victim last night that got popped, or who the best on the block with the crack rock.
If there is anyone out there who still doubts that America is a place where all things are possible, who still wonders if the dream of our founders is alive in our time, still question the power of our democracy, tonight is your answer.
She even ran for president in the 91st Congress in 69. New York's 12th district, ahead of a time, ahead of a line. But next, less acknowledge for but sure and out of Houston, Texas. It's just courage with the power that describes the soul. I was elected to the House of Representatives in 72. Yvonne Burke was elected in that same year. And before that, she had served as the vice chair of the Democratic National Convention. I can't forget to mention a Chicago politician. Cordelia Collins here served 23, the most powerful black woman in Congress history.
I feel you hit my sisters. Black women in Congress, stand up. Black women in the Senate, we salute. All women in politics, stand up.
Without y'all, there could be no us, and we salute. We pay homage to MLK, but if not for Katie Hart, it wouldn't be a King Holiday. And Maxine Waters, the voice of South Central. She combated the racism, defending black people. A soldier, fighting at equality war. Shining a light on the dark part they want to ignore. She was elected into Congress in 91. Well supported by the hood, and she looked out for the young. A black queen and a force in a political game. We lack dreams, soul searching for a spiritual change. Gotta know about the woman representing the pain. Like Barbara Rose Collins pointing out the black male strain.
I feel you get my sisters. Black women in Congress, stand up. Black women in the Senate, we salute. All women in politics, stand up. Without y'all, there could be no us.
1992 was the year of the woman. Doing a lot of things a lot of men thought they couldn't. It was Maxine Waters and Barbara Rose Collins and the delegate Eleanor Holmes Norton. Three black women then elected to Congress. A lot of hating going on, but nobody could stop this powerful black movement. Damn, not finished. Cal Mosley Brown was elected to the Senate. The first black woman to do that, inspiring a whole generation of the young women who lacked role models. Now we got a better tomorrow. Plus the list grew. In the years that followed, it was Corrine Brown and Carrie Meek, Cynthia Ann McKinney, Sheila Jackson Lee, and Eva Clayton and Eddie Bernice Johnson. Black women elected to the House of Congress.
You get my sisters.
Black women in Congress, stand up. Black women in the Senate, we salute. All women in politics, stand up. Without y'all, there could be no us, and we salute.
Partners in Community Building focuses on credit building, financial literacy, and home ownership for residents throughout Chicago and Illinois. Partners in Community Building focuses on credit building, financial literacy, and home ownership for residents throughout Chicago and Illinois. All of our services are free. Call 312-328-0873 to get additional information on our homeownership counseling, rental assistance, Cook County foreclosure mediation, and small accessible repairs for seniors programs. PCIB is a HUD-certified nonprofit counseling agency committed to addressing the housing needs of all people. Call 312-328-0873 to schedule an appointment or visit us at www.pcibchicago.org.
For true inspiration, check out singer, songwriter, and radio personality Sylvia Fedrick. Sylvia, your sister under God's construction, brings to you her best in Christian contemporary gospel tunes, and they are available for download at www.sangsyl.com. That's SANGSYL.com. Or you can visit her profile at Chicago Black Business Network. For bookings, call Sassy Michelle at 512-914-4221.
Want to learn the secrets of the wealthy? Do you think that the wealthy sell their gold and silver, or do they buy gold and silver? Learn to create wealth, collect wealth, and preserve wealth for you and future generations. Find out how you can acquire free silver every month. Visit goldandsilverplan.com. That's goldandsilverplan.com. What you don't know can keep you struggling financially. What you know can change your life. Be in the know. Visit goldandsilverplan.com today.
Hey, you want more money in your pocket, right? Savers are losers, unless you save like the rich and beat inflation. The secret? Save the right kind of money. Pure, solid, 24-karat gold or silver for as little as $20 a week, direct from the mint. Don't spend money. Exchange bad money for good money. Start today at SaveMetalMoney.com. That's SaveMetalMoney.com. The chains of slavery in the modern world are not forged with links of iron, but with the bonds of limiting ideas and debt.
Be in business for yourself, but not by yourself. Team up with a company voted the 57th most promising by Forbes. With no money to collect from your customers, no credit checks, and no cost for you to join. Visit electricmoneyteam.com, 773-980-9288. That's electricmoneyteam.com, 773-980-9288.
Hi there, I'm the X-Man, Xavier Paul. I'm a national network voiceover talent. You've heard my voice represent hundreds of brands and businesses for the past 15 years. Well, now it's your turn. I understand how important it is to promote your business or event in the right way. That starts with quality radio spot production and the nation's top voiceover talent. You might wonder, how do I get started? What's the best approach? What voice talent do I use? And most importantly, can I do it affordably? That's why I created CoolVoiceRadio.com. I take you to the finish line, giving you everything you need to advertise effectively on the radio. I'll help you create your concept, write your spot, even choose your music and cast your voice talent and get it aired on the radio. Now that's cool. Email me today at info@coolvoiceradio.com or call 646-326-7800 because nothing beats the right sound.
347-838-9825, Jimmy Lee's Underground Radio Network. I was going to go right into the election story, but let me bring my caller who called in a little bit early today. What's going on with you, Dana? Happy Monday.
Hey, Jimmy, happy Monday to you. How are you?
All right, all right. Have you casted your vote early, or are you going to wait till tomorrow and do the national holiday that we all Americans share in, and that is electing our public officials?
Well, I definitely think that we should have a holiday, but I have to work, so.
You ain't voted yet?
I'm going to do the I'm voting for the president dance, cast my vote, and keep it moving.
I hear you, I hear you. We're about to, let me give you a little update what's been going on right now with this little hurricane storm that they got going on, but let me play a little stream I got from CBS News.
A ground game sprint by both campaigns to knock on hundreds of thousands of doors to plead with their own supporters to show up on Election Day.
We give her one of our brochures.
We watched Romney volunteer Mackie Christensen in Leesburg, Virginia.
In a way, is this closing the deal?
Yes, definitely.
You're not just a Romney supporter. We really want you to vote.
We need that vote. We need the vote. It is so close. We know it's close. You know, we listen to the polls.
Nearby, in Gainesville, Virginia, Obama volunteers Linda Lagarde and Taylor Tuckerman were urging the president's supporters not to get distracted or forget to vote.
If they're supporting the president anyway, what's the point?
The point is to remind them that their vote counts. Their vote could be the one that slips in for our side. Their vote could be the one that helps make a difference.
The in-person visit did make a difference to Obama voter Stephanie Torres.
I think it does give it a personal touch. I think it does solidify your own decisions.
Every step taken by these volunteers is science.
I just encourage your support for Barack Obama.
The campaigns, after making millions of phone calls, already know who has voted early, so they know with house-by-house precision where their likely voters remain.
Do they have a plan to vote?
That precision means the door knockers are given maps showing not just who to contact, but the most efficient way to walk there.
It tells us where to start. Word in.
One of us takes one side of the street and the other takes the other.
Thanks again.
This one Leesburg neighborhood is so up for grabs.
The Mitt Romney campaign.
Most of the voters, like Zach Gelmet, a Romney supporter, have been visited three or four times.
How many phone calls? How many door knocks?
I get a ton, especially on my home office phone. It's like I must get six or seven a day.
But both campaigns now believe Virginia will be decided by the better ground game. after the candidate spent $86 million here on ad time and hundreds of hours in campaign time, Virginia,
how much our taxes are in Loudoun County, for example,
comes down to FaceTime. Wyatt Andrews, CBS News, Leesburg, Virginia.
In Ohio, the president said they showed, quote, we have made real progress. Governor Romney in Wisconsin said the numbers show that the economy is still at a virtual standstill. It takes 270 electoral votes to win the presidency, and our CBS News election team estimates that 255 are solidly in the Obama camp or leaning toward him. For Mr. Romney, it is 206. So the election will come down to the 9 swing states that could go either way. Bob Schieffer is our chief Washington correspondent and anchor of Face the Nation. And, Bob, what do you make of how close it is in the swing states?
Well, it started out close, and it is even closer now. Scott, I kind of took a survey of our pollsters. They cannot recall a time when the battleground states are closer than they are right now, with a possible exception of Ohio, where the president has a teeny lead. All of these states are in the margin of error. What that means is there are 8 battleground states out there that either of these candidates could win. It's just going to come down to who gets their voters to the polls. It's going to be all about turnout. This race is an absolute dead heat from everything that we have that we can measure it by.
Bob, thanks very much. Bob will have the latest on the campaign and the aftermath of the storm this Sunday on Face the Nation.
Play the next track,
as you know, under our Constitution, we don't vote directly for a presidential candidate.
The all-new
2013
Accord sedan.
Highly
sophisticated.
No, Ev, play the other track, Ev. Well, I'm having to take. I got Ebony loading up the track. Well, they say the race is coming down to a dead heat, and that it will be either anybody's race to call. So the way the pundits are saying it's coming down to 5 key, well, they say 8 battleground states. But we will see how everything pushes itself out. So let me see if I can get that cut again. Emma, could you stop right there. We got our audience out there. I got Dan on the line. Hold on, Dan. I got you in. I think that's Pianki. I got on hold. Hold on for a second, P. I got you there, too. And I got Ms. Todd Stamps coming in at 8:45, everybody. So let me see if I can go in and get it together.
For a presidential candidate, we are choosing electors for each of the candidates. As you know, under our Constitution, we don't vote directly for a presidential candidate. We are choosing electors for each of the candidates. Each state has as many electors as it has members of Congress and the Senate. It takes 270 of those electors to win, and our political director, John Dickerson, is here to show us how each candidate could reach that number. John?
Scott, all 50 states contribute electoral votes to that 270 number. But CBS News estimates that 41 of those states that traditionally go either to a Republican or a Democrat are likely to go into one of the two columns. That leaves those 9 battleground states, the big prizes, up tomorrow. If you tabulate the states that traditionally go to the Democrats, that would be California and states like New York. President Obama starts with 237 electoral votes. Governor Romney starts with 191 electoral votes from states like Texas and Georgia that traditionally vote for the Republican. If you look at the easiest path for the president, because he has 237 as that start, he has more pathways to that magical 270. His easiest path would be if he were to win Florida. That would mean he would only have to win one of the remaining 8 battleground states to get to 270. Governor Romney has a tougher path. If he were to win Florida, if he were then also to win Ohio and Virginia, and North Carolina, that's 4 of the biggest states, that would still only get him to 266 electoral votes. He'd need one of the remaining 5 battleground states, Scott, to get to 270.
John, thank you.
And now, the mellow sounds of Jimmy Irvin.
I can do no harm.
I can't do it no more. I can't sing no more sad songs. 1, 2, 3, hit me. Bop, bop, bop it out of bebop. Bop, bop, yeah, bass man. Come on up. 1, 2, 3, hit me. Sound good. Yeah. Saxophone on the floor. 1, 2, 3, hit it.
Romney in the running, but honestly, in my opinion, he does not deserve any of it.
Well, the way the pundits are talking about that, he don't have a chance. Obama, well, they might be setting you up for the okey-doke, but they're saying that Obama just got, if he wins Florida, it's over. If Romney loses Florida, it's over. Just that quick.
Yeah, but look at how long they had those voters out there for 8 hours. Trying to vote in Florida. They didn't even finish closing down the polls until after 1 a.m. And that was early voting.
They can vote tomorrow though. They ain't gotta be out there all day today. They can go home and vote tomorrow.
No, because what's happening is that they have lowered the polling locations so that not as many people will get to be able to turn out to vote. I mean, they're pulling out all stops. Honestly, if they think he can win, or if they think that he's even a candidate that's in the running, let him do his thing. And stop trying to hide and deceive and do all these crooked use all these crooked tactics to stop people from voting.
But Dana, how can they stop people from voting when they already said right now that's just a TV hype to get people, I guess, like you, all revved up because if Obama got 270, I mean, he almost has it. And Romney got 240. Obama just had to win 1 or 2 states. Romney got to win, like, 8 states. So, basically, it's over. And they've been knowing this is nothing new. This is nothing new. Matt, this is nothing new at all. So,
to me, that's a trick. It's not over until everybody has cast their vote.
No, Dan. Dan, like my man said, we vote for Electoral College, and most everybody has already voted already. Early voting people already got their vote out. Like you said yourself, people standing in line already for early voting. You know?
Right.
So what they did was get people like you amped up. They're going to sit. You better vote early. And everybody went to the polls all scared. So tomorrow, they basically know right now, Dan, given the information that comes in for early voting, you can pretty much count the numbers already. And so when the polls, I mean, I'm listening to Karl Rove on the radio right now. I mean, Karl Rove, like, man, you know, we damn near say pack it in. He damn near want to say pack it in. I'm listening to Rush Limbaugh. I mean, everybody, I'm just all the conservative radio shows I listen to, they almost say pack it in. Some people get Barack Obama by 303 electoral votes. I mean, so the fear tactic that the Democrats are saying that if Republicans are going to steal it, nah, that's not even there. He's almost an empty noodle when he came out there. They should have stuck with Herman Cain, but let me go on here. I got a story called Left in Power that's out here by Sandy, Superstorm Sandy.
Honestly, it's still important that people go out and vote. Tomorrow is the election day.
I wouldn't get my son from Ohio to come down and vote. We're going to vote tomorrow about 10 o'clock, go down to our polls and do this. Let me play this little clip. I got Superstorm Sandy. That is kind of heartbreaking. Got this off CBS News, everybody. Just check this out for a second. Hey, that track, yeah. The track, the track.
Everything started just coming through. Cocaine started coming in through the back, through these windows, through those windows, pouring over the sink.
You put your kids in your arms, and you're just trying to get out the door.
Yeah.
What was going through your mind?
That please don't let me drop my kids. Please don't let me drop my kids.
Danielle Valletudo has spent every night since Sandy sleeping here. At least her kids, Destiny and Isaiah, are now staying with her brother in Maryland.
Sandy took everything else. I'm not giving her my home.
Her house is close to her job, which she cannot afford to give up.
This was the hallway.
Flood water filled the first floor. Volunteers have helped strip out everything, including the soggy drywall.
And now this is my living room. Emptied out, gutted, no ceiling. It's freezing in here. Sometimes I put my lighter up to my hands to try to stay warm.
She's had to leave her windows open to dry out the place. Upstairs, she can lock herself in.
Yep.
How do you stay warm at night?
Blankets, blankets, blankets. I have the clothes over there, just throwing anything on top of me that's possible.
Last night, her flashlight barely pierced the darkness. Her street was filled with unfamiliar shadows. Her neighbor burglarized twice. Valletudo's car is a refuge, but gas is hard to come by, so turning on the heater is a short-lived luxury.
If we didn't have looters, I would feel more comfortable. But you can't even feel comfortable because you got people coming and trying to rob whatever you have left.
Her waitress job provides a little heat and a glimmer of hope.
Because my head is not all here. My head is everywhere else. But I have to work. I need the income coming in, so at least I can find a place to stay until the house is ready.
Valletudo met with representatives from FEMA today who told her it would be another 7 to 10 days before they determined whether she would be eligible for 2 months of temporary housing. Scott, she told us she did not know what she'd do after that.
Seth, thank you.
Go to the next track, Ebony. Pull your guitar on the phone. Go to the next track. Now, it's funny. Wait, let me get that track lined up. It's funny how people think, when you think about FEMA, you think about Florida, you think about down south. You don't think about FEMA in New York or D.C., now do you, Dana?
No, honestly, you don't. And I'll tell you why. Because when you think of states like New York and you think of D.C., and Chicago, you know what I mean? These are supposed to be the states with all the money. There, the people are, you know, enjoying their lives because business is booming everywhere. Everyone wants to go to New York City. It's my kind of town. You know what I mean? They got songs about New York. And so you don't think of all the tragedies that resulted from this storm. And, you know, amazingly enough, I saw in the news where people were holding up signs that said, like, F you and the marathon. You know, I don't know if you saw that because they were going to go ahead and have the marathon, which, you know, it may have seemed insensitive to some of the people that live there, but when I saw that they were going to go ahead and proceed with the marathon, the first thing I thought of was that marathon's a big business, big business. You have people coming from all over the world. And so you bring in a whole bunch of revenue. And so I thought, yeah, it may have not been a great time to have the marathon, but because it was already scheduled, in my opinion, I thought it would have been a good thing to have them go ahead and do it just so that they could create some create a source of revenue that could then be used as emergency funds for the residents of New York.
Well, that might be true, but that got cut too. Now, Bloomingbird has canceled it, which rightfully so, because that marathon is going to run right past that girl's house, and there she is homeless. With no lights, no gas, no heat. So how can somebody, here's the deal. If he would have, now this is Bloomberg, if he would have opened his arms to Barack Obama, like the Republican governor Chris Christie did, then he would not have to worry about no revenue coming in and get the city back mobile. He will only get that money from Barack Obama. What's interesting, the next day, when he's denied Barack Obama a visit to his city and Cuomo to his state, their state, they came out and endorsed the president the next day. I found that funny. But there's a lot going on in these big cities. We even got teachers here in Chicago getting arrested. Let me take you a little more Sandy Storm and play a little cut them fry. I got tar steps waiting in the wings.
Did you get arrested in Chicago?
Yeah, they went down and protested the city hall about school closings. I'm going to have a little update on that coming up in 1 minute as soon as I play this one little track. Hit it at me. Hit it.
For firewood on Staten Island.
And it's very cold, and they need to keep warm somehow, so I'm glad that the fire department...
They're breaking up furniture for firewood on Staten Island.
But it's very cold, and they need to keep warm somehow, so I'm glad that the fire department's not coming to put the fire out.
Desperate moms are standing online in Queens.
You want some rice?
Hoping the donated food doesn't run out.
It's hard, you know, because you don't want your babies to go hungry.
And all over the city, the powerful are getting an earful.
You've got to be kidding me. Where were you yesterday?
Help is now pouring into New York and New Jersey. Marines have landed in Staten Island.
Yeah.
280 state troopers from 8 states were sworn in to help in New Jersey, including 50 from the Mississippi Highway Patrol. More than 1,000 utility crews from as far away as California and Canada are being staged at Citi Field, home to the New York Mets.
We're in hand-to-hand combat. We are just going block to block, putting up facilities that have been damaged by those winds and/or the floods.
John Mixad is in charge of power restoration for New York's largest electric company. Con Ed has restored power to 800,000 customers, but have 150,000 to go before a coastal storm sweeps in midweek.
It may slow down the troops that are out there in doing restoration.
On New Jersey's Long Beach Island, homeowners, including Suba Barry, were finally allowed to check the damage.
The bottom fell out, so we were just lucky that the house is still standing. We had seen pictures of the house, so we knew it had been badly damaged, but it's still seeing it as painful.
And the gas lines could get even worse. Scott, that nor'easter could also knock out power to some of the pumps that's just been restored.
There's a new way to watch 60-minute gas.
Yeah, so that's what I'm saying now, Dana. Now, that is... That's coming from New York. Now you have a race, a marathon down there. Let me talk about let me get this New Jersey gas line thing. Ebony going to that cut, then we bring Tara in. I'm just saying, Dana, just check it out. New Jersey gas line with Ebony, that one, yeah.
So Jimmy.
Hold on, Dana.
Just a beat.
This is the only can we have.
They come with their hands full and wait as long as 3 hours.
Right around here, this is the best line around.
Because in this line, there is no profanity, just patience.
Yeah, you take your time.
After the storm, Richie Dodd could have closed like other stations did, but he told his wife, Dottie, he had another idea.
Richie said that the people need me, Dottie, and that's what he's going to do. I said, but Richie, how do you do that? He said, I don't know.
Help in the form of a hand pump.
This here pump is like a 1948 pump.
He connected a copper pipe and drove it into his underground tank. In 4 days, Dodd's crew has cranked out 30,000 gallons.
Oh, you have to do it for the people. People got to get their generators.
Generators are the only source of light and heat around here, so a can is the hottest accessory in town. Scott Caldwell showed up with five of them.
We got three little ones at home, so anything I can do to keep the house warm and keep them fed, I'm willing to do.
20, 40, 60 tray. Tracy Turi did not care how much it cost.
I just said, Richie, how much? All right, in fact.
But the Dodds did not gouge their neighbors.
That would never be Richie Dodd. That would never be Richie Dodd. Those prices would never change. What it is, it is.
On this corner, compassion is measured by the gallon.
As long as the people need the gas, we'll pump it for them.
Ben Tracy, CBS News, Rumson, New Jersey.
When you would come my way.
to finish this hook, Dana?
Huh?
Yeah,
hey, Jimmy.
You're not gonna finish the hook. I heard you singing.
You can't be playing that song when I'm all in the middle of being heated up, because that song just throw me off kilter. That is off the chain. Oh my God. It's like every
classic.
Time I hear it, I heard it for the first time.
Yeah, it's a classic. They play in the clubs, a lot of clubs in Chicago, but I lost Miss Tar stamps for call drop. I don't know. Yeah. She texted me saying the signal had went out, so she's charging the phone up now. I'm trying to have her back on today. It's her son's birthday, so she's wrapping up a birthday party for that. But yeah, I wanted to have her to really talk about the teachers that got arrested Friday. It went underneath the radar. They continue their protest on the school closing. But I don't want to discuss it without having her in it, because I don't want to be rambling on, speaking on things that I don't know and I get all amped up. But they were singing protest songs and stuff like that. That was funny. You can probably pick it up on YouTube. I was going to lead into it. But let me go back to the people in New York, New Jersey, because they got a northeastern storm coming their way, they say.
And see, that's why I wasn't. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
So the northeastern storm is going to, the damage that hit them right now is going to even hurt them even more. You see, it's funny, like I said earlier, that you don't think about FEMA on the East Coast taking care of refugees. You have families burning furniture outside their house in barbecue pits for heat. Yeah, these are white people. They probably look down in Louisiana, laughed at them. Gulfport, Mississippi, laughed at them. Mobile, Alabama, laughed at those people. Florida laughed at them, like, yeah, whatever. Poor white trash, dumb geeky Negroes, or what have you. But, when it's you on your side, what happens? Like those people, Haiti. Listen, Dana, there were 200,000 homeless people now in Haiti because of the storm that just hit them. And that's on top of the 426,000 that was homeless already. Now, that same storm that got those people in tents are now hitting these 1%ers out there. Well, I hate to call them 1%ers in Manhattan, because those people don't look like they had pretty much working at restaurants or anything. But to hit the East Coast, New York, I mean, it looks like a battleground. People forget that New York is on the island. It's not like on stable plains or land footing. It's on an island right there off the waterways. You know, New Jersey would never be the same again.
But see, Jimmy, that's why I think that God is trying to tell us that he needs us to come together as people and learn to get along. You know, I don't think, I know for sure at least, I wasn't laughing at the people down in Louisiana. It broke my heart to see so many, see all that tragedy that was just a result from Hurricane Katrina, that resulted from Hurricane Katrina. And the same thing, my heart goes out to the people in New York City who are suffering, in Washington, D.C., and all over the world that's suffering. But, you know, it's amazing that the mayor couldn't set aside his differences. You know what I'm saying? And that's just a sign that we got a long way to go as people. And I'm not talking about in terms of, you know, how we view one another. I'm talking about in terms of that we're losing the human from human beings. You know, and at some point we need to be able to say, hey, I may not agree with everything you say, but guess what? We're all on board on the same, we all on the same page, and that's trying for all of us to make it in this world. You know, so that's just my opinion.
Well, right now I guess everybody's opinion on everybody. See, it's funny how Karl Rove was saying how the storm took away all the good media and press that was coming out on Mitt Romney, and it stopped his momentum. You see, what people are not really talking about is that right now, with the storm and the devastation that it caused and the calamity and the hundreds of lives that are lost, with Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan gallivanting around the country saying, taking stuff out like FEMA and how it's not necessarily shredding the budget and such and such. And right now, that would not resonate with white America, not black America, because it's funny, the pictures that you're seeing now in New York and New Jersey,
in West Virginia. You might see a little few blacks sprinkling in there, but you see majority European Americans. So
but
this
you
is
know
a storm
what,
that. Go ahead.
Honestly, this is a good opportunity to show that these programs are needed. You know, people always talk some throughout these elections. People have been saying, "Oh, you know, the president's trying to give out handouts, and he's trying to give out handouts and things like that." But honestly, these programs are needed, and they're in place for a reason. They're not in place just so that you know so and so and their family can get over. No, these programs are in place because we need to have some sort of relief when we're in trouble.
I
state the same with the welfare.
Let me call you from the line there. All right. Go on there, Danny. Go on there. I just called me. Go on there. I'll try to get that squared away. Finish your point.
Well, I was just saying that all of these programs are needed. They weren't created just so that somebody can get over and get a couple of quick dollars and live happily ever after. Because honestly, if you look at the amount of money that they generate to a family, it's not that much, but it is something. You know, and so I'm glad that FEMA is still in place. Because like you said, while they were walking around talking about they were going to cancel FEMA, what would these families be doing if it wasn't for a relief effort like that, like people like the Red Cross and people like FEMA and these that program that they mentioned where the family could have free rent for 2 months. You know what I mean? Those aren't handouts. Those are necessary saving graces for these families that are suffering.
Oh, yeah, I totally agree with you. Where would we be without those assistance? And I think that is what really silenced Romney. He really couldn't come back with anything after that. And that was the problem with the campaign. That was Mike ended out strong. There was no doubt in my mind. I said that many times on the radio that he's going to win, you know. I still predicted that a long time ago when he first got elected. I just didn't like the antic that was pulled on both sides, the right and the left. I hear it a lot from you every night, but the right just irked me even more. Like, say, if I wasn't an Obama supporter, just by being a black man, they enraged me to the point like, man, fuck you, I'm voting for Obama anyway. You're angering me. You know, it was the talking down. And that was not even coming just for Barack Obama, the right. There's a lot of Democrats also still in the same way. Like, I can go over and over again and talk about how many senators didn't even go to the convention because they didn't want to be called David Barack Obama. But let me kick it to the commercial. I got Todd Steph about to check in.
That wasn't because of President Obama. That was because of this division that was occurring in this United States because of the president.
But again, I'm saying if they felt that their political life was more important than their beliefs, and they're phony then. If they felt that what Barack Obama stands for, I don't want to go stand next to him because I don't want everybody associate that with me. But if I win, I'm going to stand next to him. I mean, far as electric, I would not want my leader to be that way. I mean, don't come to me and say that with Obama, and then I vote for you, and then be with Obama. Or don't come to me and say you're not with Obama, then I vote for you, not Obama. Give me a straight line. That's all I'm asking. That's all I'm saying. Commercial break.
Wouldn't you just like to feel clean again? In Chicago and surrounding areas, Unique Towel Cleaning Service is the best cleaning service. We do basic cleaning and super cleaning, offices and apartment buildings. We will even clean your barber shop, your beauty shop, your spa or restaurant's towels and aprons. Call Unique Towel Cleaning Service at 773-484-5027. Ask us about our very special offer for our new clients. Call us at 773-484-5027 today and feel clean again.
Hello. This is Prentice L. Allison, founder and president of SPSI, Service Perfect Solutions Incorporated, a network of financial service professionals teaching people how to use life insurance and annuities to retain more of their income and pay the least tax on it. Our toll-free number is 877-902-9048. We are proud to have served.
Anybody in here right now with tape decks, turn them on and put them on record.
Yeah.
I'll give you a second. I want to add authenticity to your tape. So when it's sold out in the street, you all can know this was a real party. These are poems circulating throughout the nation. Everybody's bad and everybody's tough. But how many people are intelligent enough to open up their eyes and see through the lies, discipline themselves, yourself, to stay alive? Not many. That's why the universe sent me today on this stage with this descent. The rich will get richer and the poor will get poorer. In the final hour, many heads will lose power. What does the rich versus poor really mean? Psychologically, it means you gotta pick your team. When someone says the rich gets richer, visualize wealth and put yourselves in the picture. The rich get richer because they work toward rich. The poor get poorer because their mind can't switch from the ghetto. Let go. It's not a novelty. You can love your neighborhood without loving poverty. Follow me. Every mother, father, son, daughter. There's no reason to fear the new world order. We must order the whole new world to pay us. The new world order and the old state chaos. The big brother watching over you is a lie, you see. Hip hop could build its own secret society. But first, you and I got to unify. Stop the negativity and control our creativity. The rich is getting richer. So why we ain't richer? Could it be we still thinking like niggas? Educate yourselves. Make your worldview bigger. Visualize wealth and put yourselves in the picture.
Playing little excerpts from the little protest that was held this Friday at City Hall. I got Ms. Tar Stamps on the line. You need to get your people in order their freedom songs, Tar, first of all. I got to say that, you know. I got to say that, first of all.
What'd you say?
Second of all, If you're passing out scripts of Freedom Marching songs, man, just tell people to hum the songs. But anyway, enough of that. I just want to say that for the Freedom Song singers that's probably listening. What happened Friday? Could you tell my listeners what happened Friday with your teachers getting arrested down at City Hall?
What happened, greetings to everyone, but what happened in the skinny was that now CTU has, started the ball to rolling, and now what we're asking is for all the other true stakeholders, community organizers, community organizations, parents, and students to now join in this, the most critical of the fight, because it's that fight that will definitely impact our communities, which is a moratorium on school closings, turnaround schools, charter expansions, and destruction by any other name. So that's what that piece was about Friday. And we know that in order for this very critical and national issue to get the kind of attention that it deserves, some statements had to be made. So that was just the first of many to come, many sit-ins and other actions to come as we try to shine a light in this very dark place of privatizing public education. So that's what that was about. It wasn't a CTA-driven thing. We actually just partnered with other community organizations and parents and students, COCO and the Kenwood Oakland Community Action Now, which is on the west side, and then a Latino organization. I don't want to mess up. I can't call its name right now, partner with us so that we can take that action on Friday. And that's what it was about. So we went down to City Hall. We was demanding a meeting with the mayor. As of yet, the mayor has not met with the stakeholders to talk about the proposal of these, 100 school closings, this projected 100. We hear upwards of 100 to 160 school closings, and he's refusing to meet with us at this juncture. And the alderman of the 17th Ward, Natasha, is one of the aldermen that's still on the holdout, and she's over the educational committee, and she's not demanding. Yes.
Okay.
She didn't, there was a referendum that the CTU offered to the aldermen, and the 32 aldermen signed it. But she's one of the aldermen that at this juncture has refused to sign it, calling for this moratorium on school closings and insisting that we have a public hearing about these school closings and turnaround schools, the ASUAL or AS, I forget the acronyms right now, and the charter school. So that's what that was about. And then we went down at 4 o'clock. We stayed and we stayed. We asked and we asked. We insisted. We insisted. We kept getting told we could speak to the office manager or the second in command and all these other folks, for which we refused. And then finally, the last action at 10 o'clock, 10 folk was arrested. And they were released early Saturday morning. And so, like I said, that's just the first of necessary actions that must happen in order to bring, create a national conversation around the issues of school closings and turnaround schools and charter school expansion, which is basically obliterating African American teachers in the classroom, because African American teachers, by and large, teach African-American students or black students. Black teachers, by and large, teach black kids. When you're talking about closing 100 public schools, primarily in the black community and then a couple in the Latino community, you are totally destabilizing the economic base in many of our communities. So when, and you just really, the picture is just ripping again black babies from the bosom of black women, because it's primarily who are in our classrooms. Teaching is a female-dominated career in the first place. And then when you talk about inner-city teachers in black schools, you're talking about black women primarily. So we're talking about obliterating our economic base. And basically, again, it's like slavery, 21st century style, private companies getting paid off black babies where they've been reduced to a dollar sign. And, now it's really just all of their workings is just, they're more emboldened with their racism really that's all this is about. And they figured out a way to kind of create this public dialogue around it, which makes it palatable. But you know, my thing is when you swallow the first pill, and to me the first pill being magnet schools, I think was the first wave of what I deem the monster that we're sitting with now. But I think when black people in the black community decided that magnet schools was an acceptable choice in our community, that gave way to selective enrollment, which gave way to, you know, Renaissance 2010, which gave way, you know, to charter schools. And so really it's just more and more and more creating this apartheid-like educational system within this city and the country.
Yeah, that's deep. But I found it more interesting that you, the people that got arrested were found trespassing on City Hall. It's as if City Hall is not for the people no more. It's not a place to protest. If you cannot protest at City Hall, where can one go protest? I found that very interesting.
Well, that's people got to take back their rights. You know, our rights and what we grew up on, Jimmy, you and I, and what we grew up witnessing our parents do, I understand more and more every day that they were chosen for that work, that this is not glamorous work. Struggle is not glamorous. Standing up for your rights is not a glamorous, enviable position, but it's necessary. Because, you know, Dr. King and others like him, like your mom and my mom, it wasn't about them proper. It was about their children and children yet to come. And it's the same issue now. The issue that we're having around this whole educational piece is not just about Tyra and my few friends and our few kids. It's about babies yet to be born and ensuring that there are some rights that we secure for them now. And in this, you know, as we sit on the precipice of a new century, if we don't secure those rights now, and when I say now, I mean like right now, today, and in the coming future, and in the next year, or I mean, this conversation won't happen again because it won't even be an opportunity for it to happen again. The dynamic of such would have changed so drastically that you will no longer even be enabled to have this kind of discourse or have this kind of action. So the people got to, you know, are still, you know, from where I sit, they're like in a malaise of sorts. Like if it's not happening to them, then it ain't happening. And that's a very dangerous mindset to be in. I mean, it's that kind of haze is extremely dangerous, always has been, and it's even more dangerous at this particular place in time when we have so much at risk and so much at stake. So the people got to find the gumption and the heart to take their city back and to take back the public square. So, you know, you can vilify people all you want, but, you know, when you start getting these same people in great numbers, it becomes, people don't get vilified the same. You know what I'm saying? If the strike had only been a couple of black folks,
right.
You know what I'm saying?
It
wouldn't have created the kind of attention and created the kind of effect that was created based on the Chicago Teachers Union strike. So what I'm saying is we cannot afford to work in a vacuum. We have to make sure that our stance for what is right and the very racist practices that are being shown, that we continue to stay vocal and active about that. And somebody was saying to me, you know, like, but, you know, when you stand up and say stuff like that, then it make you look racist. You know, to hell with that. Black people loving other black people is not racist. That's the most, and I'm unapologetic about that. Like, Karen, bless her heart, Lewis, has to rock a very kind of defined line because she's representing 26,000 teachers of all ethnic groups, genders, sexual persuasions, and all that. I'm not. Because I'm not, I have both the blessing and the burden of being able to say my interest is just about black kids. It always has been. It always will be. And anybody who has worked with me knows that. So I've never had another agenda operating besides the one that I'm now carrying, the one I'm standing on right now. And if people are honest with themselves, my need to fight on the behalf of black children should not in any way encumber you or your feelings, thoughts, or actions at all. And what I'm saying is black folks got to own that word, and they got to take that back, and they got to protect their children. I mean, like, seriously, this is about destroying black children.
That's deep. But listen, it's fun. I'm not going to get all political saying how our education system under these Democratic rulerships has been all crazy, but there were people saying that given that Bloomberg did not let Obama come to New York during the during Superstorm Sandy, and then y'all protest, someone said it was probably calculated and coordinated to make those mayors look bad. I'm not going to fall for that little line of thinking. Somebody texted me. I'm just throwing it out there because somebody texted that in. But let me just ask you this. Since the protest.
Wait a minute. Hold on. All of that just confused me. Bloomberg not wanting the president to come to the city of New York
coordinated to make the vote, you see. I think the person 86579 was trying to get at that the Jew. I'm not trying to be anti-Semitic. I'm trying to be real political correct here, but I'll go anti-Semitic that. The two Jewish mayors not having those sensitivity to African Americans. One Bloomberg just an Obama by not having him come to the city and look at the storm damage, and Rahm Emanuel by not coming out there addressing y'all needs. And there was a couple of protests. But
first of all, okay. People need to get up. White folks, Jews and otherwise, have shown their racism in a way that we hadn't seen, and we needed to see it because we had thought we was making nice and playing well with others, and they showed you that they don't want your ass playing with. They don't want to play with you. They don't want to have nothing to do with you. So black folks need to stop wanting to have something to do with people that don't want to have nothing to do with you. I mean, that is the epitome of self-hatred. I want to be your friend even though you treat me like crap. To hell with them in that. But about Romney, about
Rom.
Play on words. Rom Emanuel.
Romney's going to be erased by another 48 hours. Everybody's going to stop saying Romney. So let's get back on Rom now. Because we've got to get about 2 hours
before Rom Emanuel does not have the least bit of care, respect, or concern for the black community in its diaspora, and specifically in Chicago, where he is the mayor. Black people have to understand that and then organize against him. Because this ain't really about liking us. This is about asserting your rights as an American. And as an American, your child has the right to a quality public education. So this is about asserting your rights. And I'm not, I don't give a less than a damn about how Romney feels about me as an individual. Black people need to get over that whether he likes us or not. Who gives a damn? We want what is right for ourselves and our children. Period.
I was reading something they said. I wasn't trying to
I don't even really care. I mean, this is a fight. Usually when you know your opponent doesn't like you. I mean, I think at this point in the conversation, if Rahm Emanuel was feeling anyway endeared to us, I mean, we would be doing something terribly wrong.
Right. has he came out to say that he's going to meet with anybody? Has any of his representatives came out to
At last I heard, and please bear with me, This was Friday. People was released Saturday. I have not powwowed with many of the folks who were involved in that action. But at last word, the reason that the people were arrested is because of Rahm's refusal to meet. His chief of staff did offer herself up, but we're not interested in any of Rahm's cronies, flunkies, Negroes, house niggas, whatever. I ain't interested in none of those people. Nobody's interested in that. So we were asking very specifically and directly to meet with Rahm Emanuel, and community people want to meet with Rahm Emanuel around the issue of these school closings. Now he's brought in this Robert Byrd Bennett, who has a history of destroying public school systems in both Detroit and Cleveland. She has left, all kinds of collateral damage being black children in her wake. And now she's here in Chicago because he believes that's the Negro to bring it on home, because they have no reverence for other black folks. She doesn't. Brizard did not. That's why he keeps pulling these outsiders to come into Chicago. They have no allegiance. They have no alliance to these places. And what's painful is that they black folks, but your kind ain't your kin. Everybody, your kin ain't your kind. So is it hurtful to see such misguided black folks? Absolutely. But does that mean I want to break bread with her and try to resolve? No, absolutely not. She is clearly the enemy. I'm clear about that. She is Satan's handmaiden. I'm clear about who she is. Huh?
Specifically to shut down schools. I was reading somebody said that a quote someone was making that you're closing schools because of low enrollment, but you're opening up more charter schools and the math does not add.
Absolutely. They are already, and this is the thing with this whole scandal. They're proposing to close all of these schools, but in the same breath, they're proposing to open up just as many charter schools. And as we all know, that charter schools are bankrolled, and it's a for-profit institution for some very powerful, rich white folks. And the other part to that whole charter school problem is that they're continuing to use public money to subsidize charter schools. So my issue with charter schools is this: if you want to have charter schools, have them. This is still America. But if Bill Gates wanted, then Bill Gates should fund the charter schools at 100%. And whoever else is coming to the table, you need to fund the charter schools at 100%. They're not going to do that because the whole plan is to be able to collect public dollars for these children who are going to these schools under the auspices of being a charter school. If they was a straight-out private school, they wouldn't be able to get that money that each child basically is worth, which is somewhere like $10,000 or some mess like that, $7,000 to $10,000 per kid is how they do these kind of calculations. I'm no math person, but we do realize at the end of the day that the whole charter school movement is a whole for-profit entity, and to privatize public education so that people can get paid. Some people who are already filthy rich can get paid, which is to me just the most, unpatriotic thing, is that you don't want to line your own pockets at the detriment to your countrymen. But the point is, they don't see, black folks in this country as their countrymen, endowed with the same inalienable rights as they are. In their minds, they're still very much wedded to the same way they saw us as slaves. So that's why this kind of behavior, this very unconscionable behavior, can be can continue because of their gross lack of. It's like the Negro problem. You know what I'm saying? Like, how about we do this with the Negroes? Put them in their own schools, charters. And then we'll make money off of them, and then the few good Negroes that we like, we'll put them in selective enrollment and magnet schools where they just cherry-pick our kids to death And then the rest of them they either put in the neighborhood school, which they totally divest from, and then throw them into charter schools. You see what I'm saying? So the parents get so frustrated because the neighborhood schools are being so under, you know, there's no resources. They're being, you know, thoroughly divested. And so then the people behind charter schools have such an amazing marketing campaign that says, oh, we could do a better job with less, which is a total lie. But because our people are not so, you know, are not well-read enough on this issue, although it's really black and white, you know, then they send their kids to charter schools and droves. And then the other thing they do, which is very systematic, this charter school system, is that they almost smother the local public school, neighborhood school, until it can't even function. What I mean by that is that you might have one public school in the neighborhood holding on, or two or three or whatever, but then they'll start putting all of these charter schools around them. And the charter schools basically rape them of their resources, which are these children. And then you say, oh, my God, the schools are underutilized. Duh. You know, you done put four or five charter schools around them. And then a lot of times in these charter schools, they court the parents. And all of these faith-based initiative programs that I'm going to name names. For example, in Cabrini Green, there's an organization called By the Hand Club for Kids, and now they're all across the city. And because Marion Stamps was my mother, I have a healthy suspicion of all organizations.
Right.
Where you come into the black neighborhood as some kind of savior. You know, I got a healthy suspicion of any white person coming to say, act like they saving black kids. You know, and if I were a principal, that would be my question to any, why, what? Anyway, I don't want to, let me not get off track. Anyway.
Listen, I got a whole bunch of, we ain't minutes left. I got a whole bunch of calls. And let me,
okay, wait a minute. Let me just say this because this is a critical point. So you remember when all those, you know, a few years back when all those faith-based initiative programs were put in place?
Right.
So what is happening now, basically, they're still the same family of right-wing Republicans that got that faith-based money and now who got charter schools. And so you have those organizations who already kind of like service the kids and after-school programs or whatever that got in bed with the charter schools to take them from the neighborhood public school. So
well, I got
that's
to brother, and Bianchi typed in. You let you know what's your take on alternative schools.
Who's running? You know what? My mother ran an alternative school before it was even fashionable or popular.
Okay.
So it depends on who is holding the purse strings of the alternative school. If the alternative school is built still, if the purse strings are still being held by people who own charter schools, then I'm anti-charter school, period.
Let me bring the call in. Let me bring this call in from St. Louis, my man, Bianchi. He's calling in. Bianchi, I got you online. You was typing in about, you said, your alternative school. What were you saying now?
Alternative schools are good. We need charter, magnet, private, and good public schools, and also vouchers. The problem with the charter schools is that charters was designed for instance, if you and I, Jimmy, wanted to teach nanotechnology to our children at an early age, well, we should start a charter school that's designed to teach just that and be sponsored by, you know, in this state, you're sponsored by either a state, a university, or a public college. And that's how they're supposed to work. But when you sit back and let these entities come in and run a same old run-of-the-mill program, that's where the problem comes. We got some good charter schools. We have a construction training charter school here that expose the children to carpentry and the building trades, some of the building trades, you know, as they go to school. So like the old technical schools used to do, and that there is good. When they come out, then they acclimate to those trades, and they can go right into those fields of endeavor. if they want. And these charter schools here operate right at what the basic instructional cost is. You know, just because of the average daily attendance amount for a year for a per student may be $15,000, look at what the actual classroom instruction amount is, which includes the furniture, the books, the teacher. You're talking probably around $5,500. So where is it? That other $9,000, $10,000 is going for administrators and things like that. A charter school takes that $5,500. Not only do they teach the children, but they also provide the transportation. And then they go out and, seek donations and so forth. But, the way these Beacons and these Edisons and that come in and they do the same thing that the traditional public schools are doing, they need to be closed. But as I said before, charter schools, and then you have some that do it pretty good, but charter schools should be designed to be object-specific. Object-specific, something that they're not getting in the traditional public schools. I'm still there?
Yep, so you still here. I was just going there. Tara, you got anything to say about that, Tara?
The only thing I got to say about that is before they raped and pillaged and divested from our communities, the regular public school was doing everything you just said. We had trade schools and college to career academies and everything else. And my thing is that the public school, if the public school was invested in and still thought as viable in children's communities, you would have those programs. So they took the programs out very intentionally. And then they made all of these, magnet and college placement and all that other stuff that's going on, which basically just was another way to just etch black kids out of these high-performing schools after they had cherry-picked them. You say charter school as an alternative to do something that public schools was doing anyway. And so my point is simply that if parents believed in their public schools and saw that we had a right to a quality public education in our communities that was accessible to our young people, you then wouldn't have to turn to what these charter schools are saying they're doing something that's so innovative, because it really isn't. I mean, that argument goes back to W.E.B. Du Bois and Booker T. Washington, intelligence over trade and all that sort of thing. It has to be a fair balance for all that. And as a classroom teacher, that's just called learning styles. Some students are natural academicians and some students are, kinesthetic, meaning that they use their hands. And so really it's just the weight of the best method, the best delivery of service to how a child learns. And can that be done in a public school? Absolutely. It had been done for many, many years. But they took it out very deliberately, understanding that there were generations of young men and women that left CVS and Roberson, whether it was in mechanics or carpentry or hair design or culinary, and went right into trade. So why then did they take those kinds of schools out of our communities and turn them over to charters? Because it's a for-profit entity, which is my point. And if they want charter schools, fine. Just don't take public dollars away from public schools for that. That's my position.
Bianchi?
They think they can really do this.
Public schools have never served black children. And I know I'm older than you and have been following this thing as it applies to black children for probably 30 years. It has never served black children. So we need to just admit that. Whites are never going to provide the opportunities for black children to compete against theirs. They're not going to do it. In these public schools, they use your children as a commodity, just like rice, sugar, and coffee. You got white teachers.
And if that's the same case,
listen,
then that's
let
the
you
same
talk.
Argument
did
for,
I not
for
let
charter
you talk?
School.
Was I quiet?
You did, absolutely.
Talking? All right,
you
let
did,
me
absolutely.
Talk. So these teachers use these schools as a means of employment.
No, sir.
And
sir,
let me tell you.
I'm going to interject now because I'm a teacher, and so I find that offensive.
Well, I'm going to show you exactly how you do it. Do you not pay?
Listen, I'm not listening.
Jimmy, will you
listen
control
me,
your
please.
Guest? Now I was quiet while she was talking.
Listen, well, Jimmy, sir, what I'm going to say is this. As a teacher, what you just said was offensive.
Well,
are you an educator, sir?
It's the truth.
Are you an educator, sir?
I'm here to have a dialogue with you. I'm here to talk about what's going on.
Are you an educator?
Yes, I am. I have a PhD in physics.
Okay, so as an educator, what you suggest to say that?
Let me finish what I got to say. That's another one you are showing. Right now, you're demonstrating what we're talking about that goes on in school. And you're an educator. You're a teacher in public school teaching black children. Then we wonder why come black children pick up these habits from. Now, as
no,
I said
sir.
Before, teachers pay.
Okay, sir, go ahead. What were you saying?
Jimmy, let me finish talking to you. I'm not talking
to you. Go on in, man.
Damn. Why come these black children come out and can't even read and write?
Go make your point, Bianchi, man. I got so many people calling.
Yes,
waiting
please
on
let's make the point.
Jimmy,
yeah, that's your point, man. Go on in.
Please let's make the point.
These teachers, they come. These public schools are nothing more than a place for them to earn a living and gather a pension. And here's where the point goes. Every time black parents have came together and tried to make an effective change in those schools, them teachers' unions fight against them. You pay dues to your teachers' union. The teachers' union at a state level or a national level turn around and buy your politicians off at the state house and at the federal government. Just look at what the NAACP done when it was trying to, when New Jersey or Pennsylvania was trying to, New York was trying to implement charter schools. Here in St. Louis, you had a scholarship, one representative wanted to put forth a scholarship bill where the businesses could pay for a child to go to a private school and have it written off as a tax deduction for the businesses, which they do when they give to the Boy Scouts, which they do if they give to Planned Parenthood. But you had the NAACP threatening out-state legislators if they voted for it, they was going to charge them with racism. Don't tell me that they don't use these kids as a commodity. Do it all the time.
Okay, let me bring Dana in for a second from DC.
Okay, yeah, because that was just about him. That wasn't about a dialogue.
Okay.
And when you begin the conversation or continue the conversation by insulting the people who are having the conversation, that kind of ends the conversation. At least it does for me. Because what I'm not going to do on your show and anybody else's show is be disrespected as a black woman in a classroom of 15 years trying to teach black children, give them the best of what I have and what was given to me, degrees aside. And my thing is, if you are sitting on a PhD in physics, then why aren't you before black children with this information? If you have this whole body of information and knowledge, then what are you doing to strengthen our young people and our future? What are you doing to pass that on? A lot of people can pontificate about points of nothingness, but what is the investment that they're making in this same population of children that they want to say we reduce them to a number? There's no teacher in front of you that thought, okay, I'm about to get paid for being a teacher. No one goes into education thinking this is the hottest way to get paid. Seriously?
Hi, everyone.
Hello.
I would like to commend you for standing up. And it's asinine that here in the year 2012 that we are still looking for and fighting for the same rights that should have been granted to us hundreds of years ago. Now, second of all, if we lived in a society where people were ethical and people gave evenly to one another, then we wouldn't be having this conversation, because guess what? It would not be a point of contention at all. But because we don't, and because we know that oftentimes when it comes to the person that gets the short end of the stick, it's the African-American children. You can see that in the SAT scores. You can see that in the ACT scores. You can see that in the number of children that are dropping out of their college communities, out of their high schools. And you can see that in the number of families that are suffering based on the fact that they cannot make equitable financial They cannot receive equitable financial contributions from these companies that they are spending 8 to 10, 12, 15, 20 hours a day working in. Okay, so if you take a school and you make it for a profit, guess what? The people who are unable to pay are going to suffer, and those are the African-American children. And so we will once again be left out of the educational process. So we need to fight to be able to keep these programs in place that will allow our children, my children included, to be educated. Because when our children are looked at in this society, we are already seen as the ones that can't learn. We are already viewed as the ones that can't pay attention. We are already placed on medications for ADHD and all these other hyperactive conditions that we don't have because people don't understand our children. So unless we can find a way to get equitable treatment for our children, guess what? We got to be the first ones standing up to say that they need to be counted, because if we leave them out as kids, they are even more left out as adults.
Yes, ma'am. And the thing, you know, going back, not that I want to go back
Let me finish, ma'am, then you can have it back. First, I want to answer her.
Jimmy,
you was talking, then you gave it to Dana. Now it comes back to me.
Jimmy, where are you in this? Because I didn't even know the gentleman was still on the phone.
Yeah. I got Ebony on the line. Ebony's still at the room, so I keep going. I mean, I'm on a microphone right now. I'm trying to do everything
at
once.
Well, Dana just got through talking. Yeah. So let me go ahead and say what I've got to say. Dana made some statements that was totally wrong. Charter schools are public schools. Nobody have to pay to go to them. It just have
but
a different
But they do
government.
Get fined. And they do have to pay for supplies. They do have to pay, gentlemen.
Wait a minute. It's not your turn. And you're a school teacher. That's what I'm talking about.
I am aware of that. I don't need you to remind me of that, but you're wrong. That's error. First of all, I thought you were done with whatever you were saying. And, Jimmy, I'm going to ask you if
you
will facilitate this discussion so that everybody can feel like they're being respected. So I'm speaking to Jimmy now, sir. I'm directing this to him. He asked me to call in. He asked me to be on this call. I could truly get off if you just want to bash. I don't have to be a part of this. If you want to have this discourse, you don't have to have it with me. So what I'm asking, Jimmy, is are you facilitating your show? And is this gentleman still talking? Because I can really opt out.
Eddie put him in the blue room and inside the room. Go on there, finish what you were saying. You still there?
Evan put him on mute, muted my guy out. He's in the chat room typing now in the chat room. What were you saying, Tara? Thank you, Ebony. What were you saying now, Tara?
All I'm saying is this. You know, first of all, when black folks start bashing teachers and bashing the profession of education, that kind of changes the discourse. And I refuse to be a party to anything that feels like, you know, anything. You know, I don't want to be a party to that. All I want to do is talk about what's happening in my classroom and across this country and coming up with some viable alternatives for our children. That is really what this whole conversation is about. And when you get on the phone and say they don't have to pay fees and all of that, that's not true. Charter schools are for-profit institutions. That's the only reason that they exist. And even if they're not paying them flat-out tuition, they do pay registration fees. They do get fined up the wazoo for everything you could possibly imagine, from not having their shoe tied to their parent not coming to pick up their report card. The noble charter schools in the city of Chicago, which I think has like 5 or 6 campuses, probably more now, you know, grossed over $250,000 in a calendar year based on fines.
Yeah.
Fining people who are poor, poor black and Latino children who get reduced and free lunch or however they classify poverty these days. But they were able to make that money from fines. Because they don't have to play by any rules that public schools have to play by. They set their own rules. You know, they don't have to meet the same standards on standardized tests. They don't have to have certified teachers. The same rules don't even apply. The playing field is not even the same in terms of what is required and expected of a regular public school teacher and then teachers that teach in charter school environments. And that's not to say that there aren't some teachers, some quality teachers at charter school. I'm not saying that.
I got a question to ask.
My position with charter school is this. If you want charter schools and the Bill Gates and the other folks who are funding this, then don't use public money for charter schools. That's my position.
Well, hold on. I got one more call in the last 2 minutes. Let me give you a quote. Somebody type in the chat room saying this, that first of all, I want to ask you, they said the courts have not defined what quality education is. And what's your definition of what quality education? What is your definition of what a quality education is?
My definition of a quality education is a classroom and school environment where a child feels safe, where they see themselves reflected, that is a full and comprehensive curriculum that includes art, music, language, technology, in addition to reading, writing, math, at a level in which their needs, academic and otherwise, can be met. That is my idea of a quality education, that upon leaving that building, whether it's eighth grade or high school, that they are fully competent in their skill set, have identified the ways in which they best learn so that they can go out in the world and produce that in whatever career of their choice.
Right. So I had another call. The whole need just dropped. That was Captain Sean Cleveland. But somebody else typed in, it says state legislators passed laws permitting, state legislators passed laws permitting charter schools to exist, stating that since the state legislator passed these laws for your schools to exist, will you go after those state legislators? That's one question.
Yes. Well, let's answer that question. You're absolutely correct. Everything that we are warring against now was legislated for. It became a law. And the danger in that is that the same right-wing folk behind charter schools are also behind a couple of other laws that are really going to impact black folks. The Stand Your Ground law is one of them. The parent-student picker, or parent picker. I mean, they got some things coming down the pike that we need to be fully cognizant of. And I think one of the things that happened is that teachers, black and otherwise, took their eyes off the legislative ball, as it were. And there were some laws that were enacted that we didn't fully understand the serious ramifications of until it had already happened. And so now we are doing the almost impossible task of trying to unscramble eggs. But your question was, will we be going out to the state legislators? Yes, we are going after all political officials who have continued to support this kind of legislation that's very anti-public education.
All right, so I got,
and
I got
racist.
Two.
I got two.
You know, I have a question, Jimmy. What kind of a sick society do we live in where people have become so greedy that they are willing to make the same members of that same society suffer? That is a cannibalistic attitude that is contributing to the demise of this country.
Not only is it cannibalistic, but, you know, I think, well, not I think, but I've been saying as much as I can, that is anti-American. I think, you know, the one thing, ooh, dare we say, white people don't want to be called is anti-patriotic. But I think it's definitely anti-patriotic to want to continue to line your pockets at the detriment to your countrymen.
Jimmy.
Okay, I got 4 minutes. I'm going to throw these two questions in. I'll bring you back in, Bianca. It said, someone wants to know, what can you tell their children? What can you tell parents of kids who are failing schools when they want to take their children out? If the schools are failing their kids, they want to take their kids out. What would you tell those parents? And then somebody, and somebody said when African Americans were pulled over 70%, they said they want alternative schools for their children. That's what somebody, two people said. But the deal was somebody said
they
what
want what schools? They want what schools for their kids?
Alternative schools for their children. It said African Americans want alternative schools for their children when polled. Then somebody wants to know, what do you tell a parent whose child is in a failing school and wants to pull their child out of that school?
What I want to tell a parent or ask a parent whose child's in a quote-unquote failing school is, what are you doing as a parent? All of this attention wants to be put on school, and that's not to say that some schools need to come under fire. They absolutely do need to come under fire. But I find it very interesting that all of a sudden when parents are mandated to be involved in their child's academic life, all of a sudden that school now has value. But when you had the kid at the regular public school, when you didn't come and pick the report card up, there was not a problem. But now that you go to the charter school and they charge you $10 if you don't, and then the fines increase, and then they kick your kid out if you don't pay the fines, but you see that as a system that works.
Look, Jimmy, I'm going to say this, and I'm going to leave. When polled, over 70% of African Americans say that they want alternative schools, including charter schools. When polled, you got these organizations and these teachers' unions that fight that, and they lose it. And let me tell you something else. We worked here with a group that took over 2,500 students out of the public school system, out of the failing public school systems in this city, and let the parents put them where they felt that their children would get their best education. Just like in Kansas, and it has nothing to do with money neither, because when they had the DSEG program in the Kansas City, Missouri school district, the judge came and asked them, say, "What? How much money do you need?" Do you know they put $1 billion in that school district and nothing changed? They had Olympic-sized swimming pools. They had UN auditoriums with translators. They had new buildings. In Kansas City, they have magnet charter schools that's French, where they speak a French language all day long, Spanish language all day long, and every other thing. They even have African Center schools, which rank in the top six of Missouri. That's because parents wanted to put their children there, and they're doing well. So this other stuff that charter schools is no good is a bunch of bull.
What's next, Tom?
I don't believe that any school is no good. I believe that all schools have some sort of value, because a school is the only place that you can go and take an empty bucket and fill it with knowledge and then use that same knowledge to continue throughout your life. But I also believe that some of these schools may not have the best interest of our children at heart, okay? And especially those children that can't afford things. You got kids that are walking around here and families that can't afford to feed them. And if they have to pay $10 for anything, I'm talking $10 for bus fare, then they cannot afford it. And so when you place those children in a situation to where they will be left behind because they do not have the monetary contribution to make, because their families may not be making the highest.
What's next, Tom?
I'm sorry?
What you got next? The next 60 minutes?
What I want to say to your listening audience, if you are interested and feel compelled to support this fight that we are in, please visit the website movechicagoschoolsfor.org. There's plenty of information on there for next actions. There's also information about all the legislative things that are in play that's going to negatively impact our children. And when this gentleman is speaking about when polled, you know, if we were to be honest, Jimmy, you and I, and much like Jewish kids all over this country and whatever, we had a separate education in addition to our public education, which was the Shula Yawa Toto and people's community schools and other things that we were involved in, because our parents understood that we needed a balanced education. You understand what I'm saying? So it still gets back to the parent. The one thing that he said that made some sense to me was that the parents made this choice. When you make a conscious choice, it's amazing to me how then you become more invested. If the parents were as invested in the public schools where their children are right now today, in turning those schools around, those schools will become the model schools that they want for them to be. Parents have power that they do not use and do not recognize to change their schools. You do not have to just send your child across the city to, quote, unquote, a charter school or any other kind of school to make it work. What I would want for my child and what I want for my friend's child and what I want for every other person's child is for their child to have a quality public education in the community where they live, where they can feel safe, and where they can be academically edified and learn how they learn best and receive a fair, quality, balanced curriculum. That's it.
Oh,
it's
all
not,
right, gotta go. Thank you, Olivia. Thank you for being on. I went over time. Sorry. Boop. Gotta go. Cut. Have you been on?